It's January, the season of intentions. We make them, we try them, we break them. We may even decide making them was a bad idea to begin with and fall back on that old chestnut to make a resolution to stop making resolutions. But I think there's more to this setting intentions thing than meets the eye. So how it usually works, we get a glimpse of something. Something's not working, something feels bad, someone tells us something they think is a problem for us. I love it when that happens. We reflect, we ruminate, we aspire, we set a goal. I'll do better, we say. I'll be better. And that feels better. We earnestly set out to do the thing we intend. And we do. Day one, smooth sailing. Day two, good. Day three, wait, why am I doing this? Day four, I do not know why I'm doing this. Day five, it's cold, it's snowing, you want me to go to the gym in this? Or it's a latte, it doesn't cost that much. I want it, I am buying it now. Or yes, I know I resolved to be kind, but this particular person in this particular situation really needs to hear exactly what I have to say. We lose the thread sometimes. Our intention gets stale. We can't remember why we set them in the first place. Other parts of ourselves rebel, and the whole thing risks collapsing under the weight of itself. So I like this idea of setting an intention not to become better, but to become you. Not to push ourselves for this or that, but to align with some deeper, greater personal call. Going after self-alignment rather than self-improvement, and see what happens when our New Year's intentions flow from that place. At the center of your being, you have the answer, Lao Tzu tells us. You know who you are, and you know what you want. My question? How to reach that place at the center of my being, and how to listen for what flows from that. As I was thinking about that question, I remembered a little story I heard once about the Pope, who asked Michelangelo to tell him the secret of his genius. How have you created the statue of David, he asked, this masterpiece of all masterpieces? Well, it's simple, Michelangelo answered. I removed everything that is not David. Right, simple. Remove everything that's not David. Why didn't I think of that? Okay, so on the one hand, I love that little story. Remove everything that is not David, and you will have before you something magnificent, something breathtaking. You will see emerge an essence of humanity, an image born in the heart of its creator, timeless in its beauty. And I believe that's us. That's us, as we really are, timeless and magnificent. And then, on the other hand, I think, great. So how exactly, how do I remove everything that is not David and allow the real, essential, timeless, breathtaking me to finally emerge, the one who has all the answers I keep looking for? And will that happen before or after I take out the garbage and make it through that pile of emails waiting for me on my computer? There's a fair amount to sort through, not just in my email inbox, but in me. I've been on this earth a while now, and like many of us who've been alive for more than a year or two, I've been influenced in countless ways, taken on the hopes of others as my own, tried to live up to their expectations, worn other people's faces, as Mae Sarton writes in a poem of hers. I think back and see a few snapshots in my mind's eye, like 1976, the year I decided I wanted to be the bionic woman. My brother wanted to be the $6 million man. After all, what preteen wouldn't want to run 60 miles an hour and heroically lift a truck off someone pinned under it? What 9 or 10-year-old wouldn't want to use their supersonic hearing to spy on people whispering in another room or read some top secret document with telescopic vision from over a mile away? It was fun to imagine being heroic, unstoppable, admired, and fabulous. Eventually, we did outgrow our respective inclinations, my brother and I. At least, we outgrew the desire to actually have an arm or leg replaced with government-funded electronics. Although the whole wanting to be fabulous part, well, that's still in there for both of us, I suspect. Over time, for me, wearing other people's faces morphed from wanting to be Lindsay Wagner to wanting to be like my band teacher, Ms. J, who was funny and irreverent and had the biggest heart ever. And then I wanted to be like my 9th grade history teacher, McKinley, who was wry and sophisticated and very smart. And then I wanted to be Simon and Garfunkel. The challenge of becoming two people never fazed me, and their harmonies were beautiful. So over the course of my life, I have wanted to be or be like a whole host of people, ranging from my own parents, although that didn't happen until much later, to a few fantastic UU ministers and a whole range of people in between. There have been many people I wanted to be like who have influenced me and whose faces I have worn. How do I separate all that out from some essential me? There were other forces too, less appealing ones, the shoulds and musts and that's not good enough. Others' expectations I internalized, as well as the people I wanted to not be like. I suspect I'm not the only person who grew up in the crosswinds of countless influences, some that drew us out and built us up, others that left scars or layers of defenses, left us with things in ourselves we love and things we struggle with now. I think of my friend whose mother was hypercritical, who is now one of the kindest people I know, but she finds it hard to assert herself. And I think of another friend who grew up with parents who struggled to stay on top of their responsibilities, and he is now one of the most responsible people I know, but it's hard for him to relax and have fun. I think of the dozens, hundreds of countercurrents that are in us as humans and all the messages we got. The things we were convinced we must urgently do or not do, the things we're attached to, the things we're afraid of. We get lost in things from the past, hooked on hopes in the future. We live with a clutter of thoughts and feelings telling us to do this or that, obscuring our ability to connect with what is really here, now, and where, and all that. Is our heart? Is that David? How do we uncover it? What do we hold on to? What do we let go of? Some of it, I think, is guesswork or intuition. We pick a direction that resonates, something that strikes us, and see what happens. I get the sense that's where Malika Chopra, the daughter of the famous Deepak Chopra, was coming from when she hit a turning point in her life. A realization struck her, and she took it from there. She was on stage talking to an audience about intention, about the difference between goals which come from the mind and intent which arises from the soul, intent which represents our deepest desires and our purpose. As she was speaking to her audience, she found herself distracted by a dozen anxious thoughts one day, thoughts about what she had or hadn't done, what she still needed to do and how she needed to do it. And it led to a moment of recognition that she didn't feel clear and directed and purposeful. Her father might be a famous spiritual guru, but she hadn't been meditating or exercising, let alone doing yoga. And as the mom of 2 young girls, she said, and an entrepreneur with a startup company, she was consumed during the day, and by evening she would feel exhausted and frustrated, not even knowing what she had accomplished, never feeling caught up. And as she stood there that day teaching others how to live from the soul, she realized she wasn't anywhere near doing that herself. So she made a decision to change her life. She started with small changes, she said, that made a big difference. And then ultimately she launched into a year-long project to learn everything she could about health and fitness and meditation and purpose, and to write a book. As part of her research, she reached out to a spiritual luminary by the name of Eckhart Tolle, a friend of her father's who wrote the best-selling Power of Now and happened to be an expert on living with intent. It took 9 months to schedule the interview. She read every work of his she could get her hands on, took meticulous notes, was thrilled to get to talk to someone who might finally, really be able to help her answer her biggest questions. The day of the interview arrived. As she was preparing to leave, she noticed a text from her father. He wished her good luck and said, "Remember, he is always in the now." Not knowing what he meant by always in the now, she ignored it and moved on. When she arrived in the lobby, she was greeted by Eckhart's assistant, who told her Eckhart wasn't big on interviews. She would have 15 minutes with him. Her mind racing, Malika thought about the 15 questions she had painstakingly selected from all of the material she had read and quickly pared them down to 3, managed to smile, and followed the assistant into the elevator, where her phone buzzed again. Another text from her father, "In the now," it said, equally mysteriously. Irritated by this point, Malika just shut off her phone altogether, walked into the room with Eckhart, and sat down. They exchanged pleasantries, and Malika explained her mission. That took about 5 minutes. Eckhart listened patiently. Then he said, "Intent is the most powerful concept." Malika leaned forward, ready to finally understand all the mysteries of her life, and then he stopped and he said, "Do you hear the bells?" There were church bells in the distance. "They are reminding me," he said, "of a time when I lived in Germany and would hear the bells ring when I was at work." Malika smiles politely, thinking, "Okay, we're about 6 minutes into the interview." And then he said, "Let's listen to the bells." Malika tried to keep smiling, but now her heart started pounding, and she's thinking, okay, we'll have time for one question, maybe. What am I going to ask? And Eckhart sat there, smiling, listening to the bells, and the bells rang, and they rang, and the darn bells would not stop ringing. Finally, at about 8.5 minutes, with the bells still ringing, Malika thought, you know what? I gotta listen to the bells. And so she took a deep breath and surrendered, and became present, listening to the bells with Eckhart Tolle, completely and totally in the now. And suddenly, she felt clear and peaceful and purposeful. Next thing she knew, there was a knock on the door. Her 15 minutes were up. So she got up, said thank you, and began to walk out. Which is when Eckhart said, "No, no, no, sit down. I want to talk to you. This is a very interesting topic to me." So they spent the next hour and a half talking about intent and purpose and what it means to have the universe serve through you. Not all of us have the opportunity to ask a spiritual luminary our deepest and most profound questions. And not all of us will be invited, just as we're sure we're about to get the answers we've been hungering for months, not all of us will be invited to simply let that go. And not all of us will accept the invitation to let go of our preoccupation and become present, find our purpose, and realize that from that place, we experience life in a very different way. We may not get to have an interview with Eckhart Tolle, but we can practice becoming present. We can practice being in the now. We can practice letting go. We can practice letting go of anxious, swirling thoughts about what we must get done or how to make it happen, and instead wake up and notice bells, colors, sensations of life, perhaps even experience some peace and purposefulness. I remember hearing once the idea that when we practice meditation, we are practicing letting go. I even heard it's kind of like a little death, like a little bit of a opening. And every time we let a thought go, we're practicing for a bigger letting go, a wider view, a deeper perspective. As we reflect on this month of intentions, as we try to access our deeper core in this first month of the year when we let go of the past and haven't quite gotten too far into the future, I invite us into an exercise in letting go.
Sorry, having a little technical difficulty. I apologize.
Doesn't matter. Most of us can't see it anyway.
There's sound that goes with this. Take two. Sorry.
When all is swept away, even if just for a moment, even if just in our imagination, what do you see? Do you have any regrets? What might they be asking of you now? What do you love about your life? What do you want to have more of? And what wants more of you? What will you do with this life you've been given? This glorious, rich, fertile day, this moment, what will you do with your life that is here, right now? You have your life back. And I would like to suggest you have the power of this moment. This moment to appreciate what is and imagine what can be now. This may be the best time of your life, full of blessings and a call. May I suggest to you, may I suggest this is the best part of your life. May I suggest this time is blessed for you, this time is blessed and shining almost blinding bright. Just turn your head and you'll begin to see the thousand reasons that were just beyond your sight. The reasons why I suggest to you, why I suggest this is the best part of your life. There is a world that's been addressed to you, addressed to you, intended only for your eyes. A secret world, like a treasure chest to you, of private scenes and brilliant dreams that mesmerize. A tender lover's smile, a tiny baby's hands, the million stars that feel the turning sky at night. Oh, I suggest to you, oh, I suggest this is the best part of your life. There is a hope that's been expressed in you, the hope of seven generations, maybe more. This is the faith that they invest in you, is that you'll do one better than was done before. Inside you understand, inside you know what's yours to finally say. Suggest this is the best part of your life. And I suggest to you.
suggest this is the best part of your life. And I suggest this and suggest to you.